Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana, it's time. It's Sunday. We're Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio with Dr. Henry Day from his broadcasting mecca in Indianapolis, Indiana. And our special guest this week, the Sasquatch detective, Steve Calls. It'll be a wonderful show.
We're pretty excited.
And the SRI Label Group, they make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio. Hello, everyone. As I said, broadcasting from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana, this is Larry Batson. As we span across this country and around the world on this magical network called Blog Talk Radio, bringing our show every week with some amazing guests, and this week is no exception, with Steve Calls will be joining us, the Sasquatch detective, as we talk Bigfoot and paranormal this week here on Blog Talk Radio. And as always, from his mecca in Indianapolis, Indiana, the honorable, distinguished, and always prompt, Dr. Henry Day. Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, Mr. Batson. How is everything at the Wildlife Preserve?
Hot. It's brutally hot.
Yeah. That it is.
People always ask me, well, they always ask me, they say, what do the animals do in this heat? They do nothing. that's the thing. They're smart.
Yeah.
Yeah. They find a shady spot and lay down and take a nap. So it's like, you know.
No different
than
me.
They're smarter than we are. We try and do stuff.
Yeah.
Did you hear about the latest news here at the animal compound, No Dr. Day?
No, share it with us.
Well, Elizabeth the baboon got a hold of Cheryl's weed whacker and proceeded to destroy it. Oh, God. I mean, it just makes you realize how strong that monkey is when you look at that weed whacker, where everything, all the electrical and gas lines and gas tanks and housings were completely ripped off of it.
And she's only like 40 pounds, right?
Yes, that's right. So, but we're going to get it repaired. We found out it's only $100, so that's cheaper than a new one. So that's what we're going to do.
She is quite an amazing creature.
Yes, she is. Are you ready, Dr. Day? Now,
well,
time from his broadcasting mecca in Indianapolis, Indiana, the distinguished Dr. Henry Day and the Wild World News.
Well, let's do it so we can get Steve on. Let's do the Wild World News for June 17th. All right, we're going to start out today in Sandbridge, Virginia. Researchers trying to catch black-tip sharks caught about a 4-foot black-tip shark, and as they were bringing it in, it was eaten by a 13-foot great white shark. So they actually got to do research on two sharks instead of just one.
Oh, my God.
Unfortunately, half of the black-tip shark was missing.
Well, imagine that.
Yeah, that's happened to me before. Now, I'll tell you, when I used to live in Tampa, I used to catch the black tip and the white tip sharks up to about 6 feet. That's best for eating. Anything over that, I didn't care for much. But, my, that's one of my favorite things. So I can't blame the great white.
Well, that's true. And I have to say, I've sampled some shark, and it's pretty good.
Yeah. One of my favorite things. All right,
yeah,
now time to wipe. Beesville, Texas. A man was startled when a 3-foot snake came slithering out of his toilet. Yeah, Police Were Called In. And the Blue Indigo was released back into the wild. And the man.
Well, yeah, they would have to be. Yeah, they're an endangered species, so they would have to be.
He ended up wiping a couple of times that day.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, put your nets on in Mount Vernon, Washington. Wildlife officials propose listing the San Juan Islands marble butterfly as an endangered species.
Oh.
Sometimes that needs to be done.
Yes, that's true.
So we're going to try to help these little butterflies out.
Good for you, Dr. Day.
Our next three stories come to us from Florida. Now, the body of a woman believed to have been killed during an alligator attack while walking her dogs was found in a lake in Davie, Florida. Now, they don't know for sure if the woman was attacked by an alligator, but they think maybe she was, but, you know, in the wild.
Yeah.
Now, there was no one on the dog. Yeah.
You know, I kind of wondered, you know, as you read this story about this poor woman, what Dave Davies might think.
Let me see if I can get him. Dave, you with us? Dave, are you with us?
Hello. Is that you, Larry?
Hello.
Hello, Dave.
Well, what time is it there? In India.
Oh, it's about 3 o'clock.
Okay, because I just nodded off. It's only a little after 7 here. All right. What was the question?
Oh, we wondered what you thought about that poor woman that they think may have been killed and partially eaten by an alligator.
I think maybe it was Bigfoot, not an alligator.
You think so, Dave?
Well, it could be, you know.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dave. Sorry for waking
Sorry,
you up.
Dave.
Lay back down.
I hit the wrong button. I'm so sorry, Dave.
Yeah, Kelly. Well, those calls from London are expensive.
They are expensive. I need to forget about that sometimes.
All right, now we're going after the program. Before you look up this video, we're going to Ochi, Florida. A video captures an alligator headbutting a trapper and knocking him out cold.
I saw that video.
Take the alligator away and charge him with something. I don't know what it would be because he was defending himself.
Well, he was, and they apparently didn't know what they were doing because they didn't cover the alligator's eyes, which is very important when you're capturing a live alligator, especially one that size, about 8-9 feet long.
And you should know, you have 7.
Yeah, I do know, and that's where they made their mistake. They set themselves up for failure.
There you go. Keep up the good work.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I always take my monkey when I go shopping. Okeechobee, Florida. A monkey escaped from a truck and attacked a Home Depot employee who brought it back into the store to help find its owner. And I believe the monkey probably freaked out at the prices.
Probably. Did they say what kind of monkey it was, Dr. Day?
No, we don't know what kind of monkey it was for sure. But as we know for sure, any size monkey, when it bites you, it hurts.
Yeah, it doesn't much matter. You're right. Absolutely right.
Yeah. I used to have a marmoset and a squirrel monkey. They have teeth kittens. And, all right, it's time to visit the dentist. We're going to the District of Columbia. Moki, the National Zoo's teething 7-year-old western lowland gorilla, has just developed 4 new teeth.
Good for him.
Yep, there will be a dentist visit here in the near future. How would you like to be that dentist?
Yeah, well, I know a vet that does that, and it's quite an undertaking.
And you know how strong your daughter Elizabeth, the olive baboon, is.
Yeah,
you can just imagine.
A gorilla, yeah. Well, they knock them down. I mean, before they do that, of course, but still.
Well, yeah, that would be a great idea. Rapid City, South Dakota, a man accused of illegally baiting a mountain lion with a dead deer has been sentenced to 8 months in prison.
Good.
Yeah. First off, wasting the deer. Yeah. Well, you know, that's the way it is. Don't mess with Mother Nature. And I was thinking they should make him eat dead deer for the entire 8 months he's in prison.
Well. You know, like we eat dead cows all the time. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, Coral Springs, Florida. A man was cited for 6 misdemeanors after trying to sell 2 reticulated pythons to an undercover officer. And well, as we know, a special permit is required for these species.
Oh, I know, because there's so many pythons in the Everglades now. They're trying feebly to figure out a way to control that, but that, you know, it's past control now.
Yeah, so, they're putting bounties on them now. So, yeah, don't try.
Yeah, usually the bounty thing works, but there's so many, and it's different with snakes. They're, you know, they're hard to find, so. They put bounty on wolves, that little different story. They pretty much wiped them all out in North America years and years ago, and did that with alligators as well when they made killing alligators legal, and all they had to do is protect them, and then the alligators came back. They say there's 1 million alligators in Florida now, so.
Well, the Federal Wildlife Agency now, they're considering dropping the gray wolf from the protection.
I know, and I don't understand that.
Leave them alone. They have a way of taking care of this themselves.
They do, absolutely.
All right, we've got new neighbors moving in Holden, West Virginia. A group of elk brought in from Arizona in March have been set free in Logan County. So if you've seen some strange neighbors walking around, it's just elk.
Oh, there we go.
All right, we're going to move along with this so we can get Steve on. Heading off to Hawaii, the first monk seal pup born in Hawaii in 2018 is a female.
Oh.
All the boy monk seals will be excited.
Yes.
We got hungry birds in Montpelier, Vermont. Residents are being reminded to put away bird feeders and start bear-proofing because reports of bears are on the rise there.
Well, good for the bears.
All right, we're going to scamper through who's gotten older this week.
Oh, and Steve can participate in this as well.
All right, we got country singer Billy Crash Caddick. Had a birthday yesterday. You remember Billy Crash Caddick?
Maybe Steve does. I have a vague memory.
Nope.
I'm just going to say 60. What?
Well, Billy Crash Caddick turned 80 this week.
Oh, I was way off. It shows
how big
a fan I am.
All right, jazz musician Chick Corea.
Oh. I'll say 78. What do you think, Steve?
84.
Whoa, Mr. Batson won this one. He just turned 77 on Tuesday.
Oh, yeah.
All right, here's one for Shelley Leibowitz. I know he had a crush on singer Janet Lennon of the Lennon Sisters.
Well, she has to be in her late 70s or early 80s.
Got any idea on this, Steve?
I'll go 78.
Oh, she actually turned 72 this week.
Oh, right, well, we aged her more.
Nancy Sinatra. How old do you think Nancy is?
Oh, my God. That's a hard one. She looked old when she was young.
That's real nice.
Yeah, that was real nice, wasn't it? Well, okay. I'm going to say 75.
I'm going to say 79.
Oh, looks like Steve wins this one. Nancy turned 78 this week.
Oh, I knew. Old.
Chuck Negron of Three Dog Night.
Oh, he's about 110.
Yeah, he'll appreciate that.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I'll go 81.
Oh, he turned 76 this week. All right, now y'all know Boss Gag. I'll be
Boss Gag, yeah. I'd say he's probably about the same age as Chuck.
Well, actually, he is. Go ahead, Steve.
No, I don't have a clue.
He turned 74 this week. All right,
well.
Steve Walsh.
Steve Walsh.
Steve Walsh of Fort Wayne, Kansas.
Oh, not a clue. 75.
I'll go 72.
67 this week.
All
right, let's end this up with Boy George.
Oh, that's a good way to end things up here. 68.
Whoa.
Larry, I was going to say 62.
There you go.
We got to give this one to Steve. He turned 57 this week.
He's not as old as we thought.
Nah.
Yeah. Life has been good to him, yeah.
Yeah,
all right,
absolutely.
Let's do the fact of the day. We'll do the fact of the day, and we'll bring Steve out.
Okay.
All right, here we go. Polar bears can eat as many as 86 penguins in one setting.
Are you kidding?
Nope.
Is that true?
They're bite-sized penguins compared to a polar bear.
My question would be 87 penguins sit around while he eats them all.
Yeah.
All right, don't you move. Well, that's the Wild World News for June 17th.
Well, once again, a great job done by Dr. Henry Day and his staff at the Wild World News headquarters in Indianapolis, Indiana. Newly renovated, HD, and also some beautiful Naughty Pine paneling in the Wild World News. I can't hardly say it, Wild World News Central. We want to remind everyone the SRI Group is our underwriter for Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. The SRI label group is for people that love all music, rock, jazz, blues, country. It is all there, artists and their classic recordings, best of ELO, Little Richard, Live, Chambers Brothers, Hall & Oates, a catalog of thousands of recordings available for download or just to listen to. Explore an amazing music catalog, SRI Label Group, srirecords.com. Our guest this week, all the way from upstate New York, known as the Sasquatch Detective. You've seen him on History Channel, Animal Planet. Lecturer, author, paranormal investigator, cryptozoologist, our guest all the way, as I mentioned, from New York, and friend, Steve Calls. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Larry. Hello, Roger.
Good afternoon, Steve.
So what's Mr. Calls have planned on a day like today?
Well, right now, believe it or not, I got to do my work thing for a little bit, but then I'm going to go home, enjoy some barbecue, and then tonight I got my own radio show.
Yeah, we want to be sure and tell everybody about that. Sasquatch Detective Radio.
Yeah, Sasquatch Detective Radio. We air at 9 p.m. on Sundays, and tonight we have Bill Munns, and we're talking Patterson-Gimlin film tonight.
Oh, that'll be great. Bill was on our show years ago.
Yep.
And he's done done more with the Patterson-Gimlin. For the people that may not be familiar with that, that was shot in 1967 in the month of October in Del Norte County in Northern California. Roger Patterson and Bob Gimlin photographed for a few moments on a 16-millimeter camera, a Bigfoot or Sasquatch, and to this day it still stands as the most important evidence we have in this.
Yep, and Bill apparently has found a fourth copy of the Generation 1 copy of the film. And
really?
That's important because, and that's really important. And it was kind of funny who had it. It was actually the estate of Eric Betchard had it. So he actually had a Generation 1 copy of it. And the cool thing about that is when you put all that together, one layer over the other, it takes out some of the missing elements of the other films. So now we have all four of these films, the four Generation 1 films, and basically what it does is it creates like this high-definition film of it that draws out more detail than like one of the other editions alone on its own. So it's really, really, I mean, I don't know the exact process, but it's sure going to be fun talking about Bill about it, and I know he did kind of show one little frame of it from 352, which we're all familiar with, which the frame where it's turning and looking at the camera real quick. And he actually debuted that on Finding Bigfoot, the final episode, just last month. So it's really exciting to talk to him about this and talk to him when he's at the in his project of putting the films all together. So not only have this high definition film instead of some of the frames. So it's going to be really cool about that.
Well, it is, and that film is, we had a chance to have, I've talked to Bob Gimlin several times, but he always said that they'd found three different sets of footprints in that area, so there's three different animals they knew for sure that were living in that Bluff Creek area. And people that look at the film, the biggest question is, why does it stay out in the open for so long? Why didn't you just make a left turn and go up into the bush and would have been gone? They wouldn't have had to film, of course. But I've had Native Americans tell me that it's the old broken wing trick, that there apparently was two or three other ones in that vicinity, and it was basically trying to lure those guys away from them. And did a pretty good job.
Either that or that's where its home was. They got to have their own little territory, so it saw that. It saw them coming, so it boogied off, and looking at it, the area that it was filmed at, the path of least resistance seems to be the way it traveled, and we all know that animals tend to travel the path of least resistance.
Sure, absolutely, and along water.
Yep.
So that would have all made sense, but it still puzzles me. You see all these, like my wife had brought this up, you see these Bigfoot / researchers, and they go out at night, and all the best films, I consider the Gimlin film, possibly the Freeman film, were shot in the daytime. I mean, we basically have no film of Bigfoot at night, except maybe the one that was taken up in Northern California with the model in a Winnebago and something walked by the window, and they photographed that, so... which was several years ago.
Yeah, that was a ways. Then we have the New York Baby video that was taken right around dusk.
Yeah.
And that one has always fascinated me when it first came across my my desk in 2002. And, there's another great example of, this thing is in a tree swinging around, and it's definitely not somebody's pet monkey because, Larry, you would know more than anybody. You're visiting an area where you're not licensed to have a monkey, where it's not allowed on the property, and you're just going to let it float up on a tree and do whatever it wants willy-nilly. Chances are you're not going to get that sucker back.
Well, that's true, and plus... if you saw a chimp in a tree, that's pretty easy to identify. Or yep. A gorilla, easy to identify. And there's no monkey that actually looks like what I interpret as a Bigfoot or Sasquatch. So it's like, right. Yeah, it's... what do you think of the film? Now we're talking these film footages that appear on the internet, which I find interesting. What about the one, I think it was from Colorado, where the folks are going down that darkened roadway and something runs out towards their car and then the film gets shut off? I'm sure you've looked into that.
I don't recall looking into that one, but here's the problem I have with a lot of films you find on the internet, is that a lot of times you'll just see, okay, they're just crossing the road, and boom, camera shuts off.
Mm-hmm.
What that's telling me, you know, what about the story behind the film? What about what happened, you know, let's see some film before you were filming that. Let's see some film afterwards. Because, well, let's face it, you see a Bigfoot crossing the road, you're not going to shut that camera off and that's it. You're going to stop, get out, have your camera going, looking around. Or you're gonna, as you pass the area, you're gonna jack that camera out, shoot behind the vehicle because you want to see as much as you can for as long as you want. So a lot of these films give themselves away to me by the way they're shot. You know, it's like the cat from Canada who's got the headshots of the Bigfoot allegedly, or the video. You don't see anything.
Yeah.
You know, you only see the headshot. You don't see any. You know, you take a picture of a wild animal, there are, you know, most of the time, you don't get that one perfect shot right away. There's some misfires. How come we don't see any of the misfires? How come we don't see any of the, you know? Whereas the Patterson-Gimlin film, let's look at that film. A big portion of that's blurry where he's trying to run and get that, and then there's pictures of them casting afterwards and taking the prints and pictures leading up to it. That picture tells a story as well as Bob and Roger and Aldo Atley had all something to say about that film. That gives that film a little bit of background. The same thing with Paul Freeman's film. He had a story to go behind it. He had before pictures, after pictures, all that stuff. And he had a decent story of why he was, where he was, what time he was. But then you get these videos on YouTube that show a very brief clip, and maybe, oh, my God, that was amazing. I couldn't believe I saw it. And that's all you get. You don't get the, well, you know, I was traveling eastbound on Route 26 at 5:49 p.m. In the month of November, and this thing ran in front of my camera. You don't get that. And to me, that's just tantamount into, this is probably just a prank or a hoax video that is being, you know, basically used to get hits as clickbait so their YouTube channel can get, you know, a couple million hits, and then they can become YouTube stars. And I think that's where a lot of it's going nowadays. And unfortunately, we see a lot of quote-unquote researchers going out in the field, and every day they go out, they come back, and they got footage, which is very innocuous, a lot of pareidolia, a lot of stuff that nature can really explain. Like, look at this tree bend. Well, an ice storm could have done that. You know, look at that bend in the tree. Well, people don't realize that trees just don't bend the first time you bend them. Like, a Sasquatch is so strong, it just bends it like a piece of metal. No, it actually has to be, you know, tied down. And that's the way the Native Americans, I should say, made those little saddles in some of the trees. They had to tie them down themselves. And it would take a month or two before they would actually stay to that configuration. So there's just so many misnomers out there. And there's one guy out there, I love it, he's filming nothing and saying, oh, yeah, there's a cloak one, and there's one next to me, and let me go out and, oh, you see that blob out there? There he is. And, you know, I got to, you know, it's all about the footage, as I like to call it. And the term footage annoys me, too, not to get off on a rant, because it's so wonderful.
Go ahead.
Bob Gimlin's film was footage. What we're looking at now is video. Footage is an actual reference to the amount of feet of film.
Yeah.
So when I hear footage, it's like, oh, it's not footage anymore. But, so that's my rant.
Well, that's all right. We love rants. Dr. Day's been known to go off on a couple himself. So that's, we love
yeah.
the rant. Yes, absolutely.
You know, I mean, I always look at that, you know, from an investigative standpoint. I mean, by trade, I'm an investigator. That's my profession. So when somebody comes up to me and says, well, I saw a Bigfoot, I saw it across the road and over here, well, what else did you do? And if they have no story around that, then there's really nothing you can do to verify that. And to me, that's just, you know, that's a bad alibi to me. Yeah.
Well, and two, you know, if it crossed the road the night before, it could be 50 miles from that spot anyway, so it's kind of silly.
Right.
Silly sighting report. Yeah. Like, I want to talk to the guy that has him over every night for a couple beers and a piece of pizza. That's the guy I want to talk to.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you want the stories there where things are happening over a series of a period of time. It may not be your classic habituation. There's been a lot of folks to me that have done, you know, that have done harm by saying, oh, yes, I'm doing so much with these things. They're coming into me every night, but yet they can never provide any physical evidence whatsoever. In fact, some of them have even provided some of their cartoon drawings, which drives me up a wall. Oh, look, Bigfoot wrote that. And I'm like, really?
The Sasquatch detective Steve Calls. We're going to take a short break. I want to remind everyone the SRI Label Group is our underwriter for Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. Check it out, Shelley Leibowitz, Bennett Leibowitz. What a wonderful site it is. All kinds of wonderful music, like this tune from Mitch Ryder, right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Speaking
It's Ryder, Detroit Wheels. The SRI Label Group is our underwriter for Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. The SRI Label Group is for people that love all music. Rock, jazz, blues, country. It's all there. Artists in their classic recordings. Go to their website. I'm telling you, check it out. SRIRecords.com. As always, along with Dr. Henry Day, our guest, the Sasquatch detective, Steve Coles. And Steve, right before we took our break, I was going to talk to you about a particular case that received a lot of publicity, and I'm pretty sure you had a chance to look into it, and we're talking about the Sasquatch in the freezer.
Oh, yeah. Good old Bigfoot in the box, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was quite the little ruse that was played. Of course, a lot of people know the particular gentleman involved, Mr. Rick from Georgia, and he got a police officer involved who was actually out of on disability because he had gotten shot or had got shot in the hand, and
yeah.
They started promoting that they had a frozen Bigfoot in the freezer, and not too long, they kind of asked if somebody else can get involved, and it was a guy who kind of had this not such a great reputation out in California who had gotten involved and really heavily promoted it into what eventually was dubbed this big press conference on a Friday afternoon in San Jose, California. And it was, I forget the exact date, it was sometime, I believe, in August, I want to say the 15th, though I could be wrong, could be the 17th. Right around, it was known as Bigfoot Black Friday, where you know, they basically said they had this Bigfoot in the freezer, and there was some play with some DNA results, like some of the DNA results got sent to, like, myself and somebody else or something different than what actually had been received. And I kind of invited myself to the site of where they were bringing the body to. So I showed up. And within 12 to 14 hours of getting there, of course, when I got there, this thing was completely under a block of ice, so you really couldn't. So what we did was, me and another gentleman, who actually was the son of the promoter, we were listening to Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie, and Lauren Coleman was on, and they also had another gentleman who said, you know, that was, you know, he's seen the pictures and he believed that was his suit. So I remember me and this gentleman looking at one another, and we had decided, let's go to work on this thing. So we put the salamander in the back of this rented truck where the freezer was.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, it was frozen solid. It probably weighed about, easily it had to weigh close to a ton. I mean, it was 124 cubic feet of ice, water frozen.
Wow.
In that freezer. And we had, and the reason why I knew that was because I had actually took the, it was 125 gallons of water frozen into that thing. And the reason why I knew that is down the road, I conducted quite an extensive investigation post-incident. So me and the gentleman, DJ, we ended up putting the salamander into the thing where actually it got so warm in that back of that truck, the actual insulation in the freezer started to drip out and melt out. We started melting the insulation of the freezer. So eventually we tipped the ice away. I had to first get my hand in there and pulled out a rubber foot. So obviously it was a hoax. And there was a full blown attempt by the promoter to cover it up with another hoax, which I would not go for. So that was the last time I had ever spoke to him. And then we moved forward, and I moved forward with an investigation of, did the promoter really know whether or not that was a hoax to begin with? And obviously I had done some talking, there had been some playing of sides, and me and the originator of the hoax, Rick Dyer, were in quite a battle. And finally one day I said, listen, Rick, you're not denying it's a hoax. You somehow saying that I'm involved in this, why? And then the whole story came out of why, because he was being fed some stuff by the promoter to him. I was being fed stuff about him by the promoter. So he was trying to play both sides to get to the point where nobody was talking with one another. So I eventually, in 2009, about 3 months after, 4 months after this had all been exposed as a hoax, went down to Atlanta, actually got a copy of the freezer receipt, which kind of coincided with the same day the promoter flew in to Atlanta to see the body. And his thing was, well, it was frozen over. I didn't get to see the body, despite them taking pictures with the freezer in the background where it didn't look quite frozen over. And then I learned that you know, you're not going to freeze 125 gallons of water in this freezer. It's going to take a few days. It's going to take 5 days to get that completely frozen over. And it's got to be frozen in layers, too, I understand. So the bottom line on that was there was no way possible he could have not seen it unfrozen. He could not have seen it frozen. It just, there wasn't enough time. He was out by Sunday afternoon. He had flown out of Atlanta. That thing couldn't even have time to freeze in. Like, they picked the freezer up at 8:30 in the evening the day he flew in, and the pictures were taken the evening before. You just can't freeze that much water in that freezer in less than 24 hours. It's just not physically possible. So there you have it. That kind of, you know, and the fact that he did send some altered DNA letters to a couple of people trying to claim that the DNA was half human, half ape, when in actuality it was human possum, and it was actually, so, you know, so that was also another damning fact. And of course, if you go back in history, you know, this gentleman also had the overall goal of the plan was to have the folks that came in to do alien autopsy to do a you know, fake autopsy on the Bigfoot body. And what I believe is that he thought we were going to, you know, that we were going to be so horrified and embarrassed that we would go ahead and just sign non-disclosure agreements and just, I can't talk about it, I signed a non-disclosure agreement, which I refused to do. And he even stated that, you know, he had alternative plans. We'll just sign non-disclosure agreements. We'll say the public pressure was too much for them. They'll take the body back. It'll disappear. But in the meantime, that particular Tuesday, he was going to have people fly in to film a quote-unquote autopsy. So that was the game plan. I mean, if you think about it, oh, yeah, Bigfoot autopsy, you put it out there, you make a few $1 million on the TV production of it, and then, you know, it's wrapped in mystery. But I kind of put my foot down and put a stop to all that. In fact, it's kind of funny because Rick and Matt, the two original perpetrators, they've kind of separated ways. And many, many years later, I talked to Witten, Matt, who's now relocated himself to Texas. And, you know, I just was trying to confirm him over the years. I mean, that's how much I am about solidifying my evidence to make sure. And I always, like, you know, Matt, you know, like, yeah. So everything, what was the biggest mistake? He goes, the biggest mistake made was sending you to that, or by you, color, letting you come to that, that the body recovery, you know, up in Indiana, which isn't too far from Indianapolis. And, you know, he always said that was the biggest mistake, because they all figured they could make a lot of money on this TV program. But I was not willing to sign a non-disclosure agreement. I was not willing to cover a hoax with a hoax. A man is only born with one integrity. And I'm not going to jeopardize it for this effort. That's for sure. And it would never jeopardize my integrity. So
wasn't the body and freezer sold for a lot of money because it was considered to be the greatest hoax ever pulled off?
Well, here's the I actually wrote a book on this, and it's available on my website at squatchdetective.com. It's called 50 Large. And Dyer had wanted $50,000 as an advance to all this licensing and stuff, allegedly. That's what was written up into this ad hoc contract, which surprisingly, despite the promoter having an attorney and all these other people, this is how he was trying to play me. Oh, I can't get a hold of anybody to do the contract, so can you do it? So I kind of typed out the contract from freehand because he knew I had some legal backing, because I, like I said, being an investigator, I work with both sides of the legal process quite a bit, both the criminal and the civil sides. So I had a little foreknowledge of how to write contracts and stuff like that, and try to make them attorney-like sounding and make them kind of rock solid. And so I wrote the contracts up, got them off, and that was really the last I heard of it until like a week later. And that was, again, Saturday morning, the morning after they bought the freezer. But what happened was is they asked for an investor who happened to reside in Muncie, Indiana, and he also had a home in Eaton, Indiana. And they basically asked, now, according to, I'm trying to think, because I'm the only one who actually, and this is also in the book, I'm the only one ever to get the police report. I FOIL requested the police report at the conclusion of all this. And I did. I got an 89-page police report, has statements from everybody, statements from the police officer, news articles, the actual receipt for the ATM withdrawal of $50,000 by the investor from Muncie, Indiana. And what he did was is he put up the $50,000. Now, according to the investor, quote-unquote investor, he was to be repaid in 90 days by the promoter from California. And I'll just say Tom. I'll just say his name is Tom. He agreed to get paid back at $75,000 for a $50,000 fronting within 90 days of you know, giving him the money. Now, Tom, on the other hand, says, no, I never promised that. So now there was this little internal fight between Tom, the promoter, and the investor. And they were conflicting, going back and forth. Then what had happened was the actual suit went up for sale, and it was a gentleman, a guy who runs a radio broadcast by the name of, Joshua P. Warren, actually set up an eBay account for the suit to be sold, and that was being sold through Tom, the promoter. And then this is how this whole police investigation came to an end, is that they had gotten wind of this suit being for sale. And when they called Tom, Tom started bragging, well, I didn't know anything about it. You know, I'm not selling it. I don't know who's selling it, blah, 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 blah. In fact, I know the person who had it in his possession was Tom's son, TJ. So, you know, the police report very even said right in the police report, he bragged about the bid being up there despite not knowing who was selling it, basically showing that he had actual knowledge that this sale was going on. And so they kind of left them, like, with a bad taste in their mouth. This guy says he doesn't know what's going on, but he knows what the bid is. Kind of funny. Why isn't he, you know, making a storm up about this? So the next day it got sent to the DA and it got shelved. No charge, you know, no criminal charges for Dyer and Witt, because they realized that out of everybody that had made statements, the person that had been with them the most, Tom, had never made a real statement to the police. He took a press release, which was edited. He took a press release of mine that was edited by the vice president of searching for Bigfoot and used that as a statement and just put on top, this is what happened. He never told the police, well, on such and such date I met them and this is what they said, or on such and such date I met them and this is what they said. And, you know, that's the actual fact of what had happened behind the scenes with police investigation. And that's why they kind of just, people were wondering, oh, well, why didn't Biscardi file charges? Well, Biscardi never really wanted to file charges. He never did anything. It was actually Bill Lett, the guy who put the money up. But once Bill Lett had said, hey, listen, this was a loan from Biscardi, it wasn't really, and now I'm blowing the names out, but now it wasn't really, you know, his money to make the complaint on. It would have to come from the guy who borrowed the money. So the bottom line is there was just so much confusion and their stories weren't straight that they just kind of said, no, we can't prosecute.
Yeah. I think the whole problem is they had too many people involved.
Well, in actuality, they only had the investor, Biscardi, involved in it, and they had these circulatory witnesses. And but the problem was, is number one, they couldn't establish who the victim was, because one guy saying, well, the guy who actually came forward saying, hey, I loaned this guy the money, I want to file criminal charges. The police saying, well, it's got to be the guy from California that's got to file the charges, but he's, you know, not telling the, you know, he's giving them half stories and not giving them full disclosure, which a police agency was going to be required for that. and they probably took the attitude, well, if he's not gonna come up with the meat and potatoes, we're just gonna shelf this, and that's what they did. You know, they felt they were being jerked around by him, and that was very apparent in the last memo by the captain who was investigating it to the chief of detectives. So.
Well, I can remember when the story broke, I was sad because if this is true, then it's all over. And I was quite delighted when I, in fact, I remember looking at the first photograph of it, and my wife Cheryl looked at it and said, that's a monkey suit.
Yeah, it's funny. I was kind of very neutral on the whole thing at first because, there was, even within my own people, there was talk that maybe this wasn't the real pictures, maybe they're just sending us BS pictures. We really didn't know. And we know because of the freezer in that picture, we know Saturday morning they hadn't even started freezing that thing over yet.
So
it's like they didn't even start the freezing process Friday night. They probably did it Saturday morning and Saturday evening when the pictures were shot, or Saturday night when the pictures were shot. And
The legendary John Green that we recently lost once told me, and he'd been involved with the Bigfoot Sasquatch story for so many years, from the very beginning, per se, here in the United States, that the longer you look into this, the more questions you'll have. And he was absolutely right with that.
Oh, absolutely. And a lot of people don't know this. I think it was 19—don't quote, get me exact on the dates, but I think it was somewhere between 1965 and 1968. Where John Green, Rene DeHinden, Roger Patterson were all involved, and it kind of caused a rift behind them between another Bigfoot body hoax, a guy who said he had a body stashed away in a cave. The gentleman's name was Frank Curlow. He had a partner. I forget his name off the top of my head, but that gentleman had disappeared. And it's actually covered in Rene DeHinden and Don Hunter's book, Sasquatch. They actually cover a little bit about that and how it caused a little bit of a rift between the three of them at one particular time, because everybody was trying to get elbow room. Who wants to see who wants to see the body first? And as of course, it turned out to be bunk. We saw this again. I think I forget what year it was, but it was maybe a few years, 2012, I want to say, maybe 2011. We had a gentleman by the name of Ed Smith, who was very active into trying to persuade the Mid-America Bigfoot Research Center out of Oklahoma. He was a very mysterious guy. He was on my own show a couple of times, said he had this team, and they were in the woods of Middle America, South Middle America, and they were doing a big scientific thing, and then all of a sudden, they announced to the MABRC that they have a body, and that became the Daisy in the Box story. I remember I was asked to be part of the what they call the bridging team, and there was like five of us involved, and we all got on a conference call, and we're like, well, what do? We become public on this? And my stance was I agreed. I was part of the pro let's go public with this, because that's going to, if we go public with it and it's a hoax, it's going to not drag it out anymore. If we're quiet about it, this thing's going to drag on for weeks, because there'll be one excuse after the other. But if we go public with it, it's going to put a timeline on things, and it's going to make that clock tick faster. And sure enough, within 24 hours, 48 hours of putting the announcement out, it had crashed down to the guy admitting that he had hoaxed the whole thing. And then not only did he do that, but then he got angry and started ranting in forums that he had been in for many years as a pro Bigfoot guy, saying that there was never any, I don't believe there's anything such a Bigfoot, you're all a bunch of idiots, and off he went, never to be heard of again. And thankfully so.
Our guest, the Sasquatch Detective Steve Calls, what an outstanding show, Dr. Day.
Yeah, incredible. We need a lot more serious investigators out there like Steve.
Yeah, we need to have Steve back on. Of course, he has his responsibilities with his own show. But, Steve, it's been absolutely outstanding. Thank you so much for giving us a little bit of your Father's Day on a Sunday afternoon.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me on. And, you know, next time I come on, maybe I'll throw you some stories that I've encountered over the years that have been really, really kind of molded the way I've fallen. And I think you'll enjoy it.
That would be fantastic. We want to remind everyone, SRI Records, SRI Label Group, they're the underwriters for Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. Every Sunday at 3 o'clock and listen to it free after the initial live broadcast. Have a great week, everybody. You've been listening to Wild World on Blog Talk Radio.
There's a party going on right here, a dedication.